To the Alma City Investing Show, episode number 7, with your hosts Aaron Beal and Jason Lee, where we talk about everything investing in San Antonio. Today, we're going to talk about finding private lenders, everything about private lenders, kind of the difference between private lending, hard money, and kind of everything in between. Yeah, so no real updates this week. We're just going to kind of jump right into it. So a few weeks ago, we talked about kind of A to Z, you know, how to get started. And had a lot of good feedback from that. So one topic we wanted to dive into more is just the idea of, you know, how do you fund your deals, which is generally going to be either hard money or private money. So yeah, we'll jump right into it. So Jason, you want to get us rolling on, you know, how we fund our deals, what that looks like for us, kind of, you know, the different options available, you know, to folks out there that are, you know, wholesaling, fixing, flipping, all that good stuff.
Well, before we jump into things, as of recording the podcast, March 1st was Aaron's birthday. So just a quick happy birthday to Aaron. And just wanted to, throw that out there for all the listeners. So, but yeah, jumping into things. So the difference between hard money and private money, this is a question that we get a lot. And it's really easy to kind of get the two confused. So the way I like to think about it is hard money is usually institutions or like bigger companies that will lend you money. So these guys have maybe giant lines of credit, you know, 20, 30, 40 million, and then they're lending to a bunch of different borrowers and they set up an actual like business to do this. So big ones in San Antonio, for example, we always talk about Searchers Capital or Longhorn Investments. Those are two big ones. And typically most of them function the same. They will lend you up to 70 to 75% of the after repair value or the LTV. They'll cap you maybe at like 90% of the loan to cost or, you know, LTC. And then they'll, some will require appraisals. There's just a lot of like guidelines when working through companies. Ultimately, that's just protecting their money. So that way they're not giving it to people and who are going to lose it and that sort of thing. And so that's the hard money. And then private money, I like to describe these people as individuals. They don't have these big companies. They're not lending to a bunch of different people. They might be lending off to one or two people. They might have anywhere from...
I'm going to interrupt you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Back to hard money. Can you give us like a... There are lots of kind of abbreviations, lots of that stuff. Give us some like numbers on like what a deal would look like. You know, just some examples. You know, what is... Like what would numbers on that look like with repairs, with what the loan, all that good stuff. Just to kind of put, you know, something out there that makes... Maybe slow things down a little bit and, you know, makes it a little easier to understand.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out because it's really easy to start talking in a bunch of different acronyms and real estate jargon. So I appreciate you throwing that out there. So let's just take a deal. Let's say that you're looking to flip a property and you are buying this property for $100,000 and you say, hey, it needs $60,000 worth of work. So purchase plus rehab, $160,000. And you tell the hard money lender that I think it's worth $200,000. So usually what they do is they'll loan, let's just call it up to 75% of the ARV or the after repair value. So you said, hey, $200,000 is that ARV. They say, cool, we'll loan you up to 75% of that or up to $150,000, for example. And then, so let's say they loan you $150,000. It's really on you to come out to closing with the extra $10,000 difference. On top of that, a lot of the hard money lenders will also charge you what's called points, and think of points as like a percentage. So when I say, hey, they're going to charge you 2 points, they're going to charge you 2% of the loan. You pay that at closing as well. And then you also have to pay for the regular closing costs, insurance, that sort of thing. So on a deal like that, where you're buying it again for $100,000, you're putting in $60,000 worth of rehab, and they'll loan you up to $150,000. You're probably looking to come to closing with like, I don't know, 30, maybe 35K, somewhere around there. And that's why we always say that it takes some money to get into flipping or get into rentals and that sort of thing. So we've talked about our first time flipper program multiple times. We always tell everyone like, hey, you're going to have a minimum of like 30, 35K liquid. That obviously changes on the deal. And then one other thing I'd like to note too is that $50,000 they're putting, giving you maybe for like the rehab, they never give you that money up front. So when it comes to the rehab, what they'll have you do is they will, hard money companies will make you pay out of pocket for the rehab. And then you'll do what's called draws. And a draw is when they come out, inspect the property. You tell them, hey, I did $10,000 worth of work. They come out, inspect it, say, yes, you did. They'll reimburse you that $10,000. And that's how the draw system works for hard money lenders. So did I miss anything there?
Yeah. So a few things just to clarify. So that, like, hey, the property's worth 150. A lot of these lenders on that total value, they're going to say, hey, we'll do 90% of that. So they're still going to make you come with that like $15,000 out of pocket, right? So there's some that will do 100% financing, but it's not common. Most are what, 80, 90, 95? You probably know more about this than I do.
I've seen anywhere from like 80 to 90% of the purchase price, and then maybe like 100% of the rehab costs is what they'll come with.
Yeah. So, and they're all kind of different on that, but in general, I mean, for the most part, when you're talking hard money, it's an asset-based loan. So, you know, the better the deal, the better, I mean, the better the terms, the more they're going to be willing to lend to a certain extent. They're all going to have maximums, but, you know, you bring this lender a deal and you're going to be all in at, you know, 40, 50, 60% of the total value. That's a lot easier for them to lend on. They're going to be able to give you more money. It's just going to be easier, right? If you're some like pressing 75, 80, 85%, they're going to be looking at that with more scrutiny because everything's based on the actual asset and what you can do to force value in it. It's a little bit based on, you know, the person getting the loan or the company getting the loan, but not near as much as, you know, your traditional mortgage where it's all pretty much based on your credit and your ability to pay for it. So with that, you know, a lot of times, you know, they'll run your credit. You'll get better terms with more experience, but in general, it's based on the deal, right? It's based on, is the value there? Is it not? It's very much based on the asset, not, you know, the person, which is, you know, very different than normal loans. With that too, I mean, one of the positives about, you know, hard money, and in a lot of cases, you're getting an extra set of eyes on it. They want you to succeed. The worst case is they end up like foreclosing on this, taking it back. They don't want to do that. So they're invested in you being successful as well. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, these hard money lenders invest themselves. They may require appraisals and stuff just to make sure their assets protected. But at the end of the day, they want the value to be there because they're more, you know, it's safer for them in that situation. So that's one thing that, you know, I think is very beneficial starting out is you might see something and take it to a hard money lender. And if all the hard money lenders keep telling you no and keep telling you that they don't see the value you see, like there's probably something there, right? So I think especially early on, it's almost just really nice to have a second set of eyes on it. If you're new to this and saying, hey, I think this house is going to be worth $300,000 fixed up. If every lender you take it to says, I think it's worth $250,000, it's probably worth $250,000. But, you know, so it's really nice, especially when you're starting out, just to have that extra set of eyes on it, someone else vetting that deal. You know, I'd say it was one of the benefits of using hard money.
So I have a question for you. You said it's an asset-based loan, definitely true. But I know a lot of hard money companies do like still like to pull credit, just they want a little bit of background, I guess, on the borrower, right? Because if you're a guy that has a 400 credit score, you've been bankrupt like twice and you defaulted on a, you know, bunch of mortgages, they probably don't want to lend to you or has to be a really good deal. So what does it look like for someone that maybe has like, you know, 580 credit score, not the best, they haven't done a deal before, they're trying to get in the game. Would they still be able to qualify or what does that look like for them?
Depends on the lender. So I think if the deal is good enough, you'll find someone to lend on it. So I think that depending on who it is, some have like hard, like, hey, if your credit's below this, we're not doing it, we're not touching it. So that may be bringing in a cosigner, that may be them saying, hey, we're going to do less leverage on this. We're only going to go up to 50%. Like we want to make sure, you know, normally it would go to 70, but like your credit score is like 300. We're not going to do that. So I think you'll find someone to do the deal. It just is probably not going to be the best terms. But I mean, at the same time, if you have a track record, I think it matters less. So, you know, if you have a track record of, hey, I flipped all these million houses, whatever, people are going to look at that and that they're going to take that into account too. But I think there's a certain level with like credit and stuff where it's like, hey, we're not touching it. But that being said, I mean, I think there's probably lenders out there that will, you know, take their chances.
Yeah. The reason why I ask is because usually, like you said, you'll find a lender to do it, but most of the time they'll want to have you come to closing with more money and have less leverage or money in the deal for them? So that way, you know, if things go wrong, they have less money in the deal and they're less likely to lose money. So if you're out there and you don't have the best credit score maybe, but you want to get in the game, if you have some money saved up or you can get someone to co-sign, like that, those are ways to still get in the deal. So don't think you can't flip or take on a hard money loan. But I think, yeah, so that's hard money. Private money, you want to get into that, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, private money can kind of be anything. You know, it's a lot of times functions very similar, but like, I mean, it's kind of just like you find someone that's willing to like trust you with their money and there's no rules. So, which is the good and bad part, right? So, you know, one thing that, you know, we've seen a lot and it seems like it's a growing thing of like everyone wants like, or just expects that they should be able to have private money for all their deals. I know that I did a lot of deals with hard money. We still do a lot with hard money. I know Jason has done a lot with hard money and partners. And, you know, I've given up half of a lot of deals to have no money in them, right? But it seems like now it's the kind of this like popular thing that like everyone thinks that they should have like endless private money without any experience. Just because like, so people talk about private money a lot, but I don't think that they realize it's like something that's kind of slowly built over time. And honestly, I don't think like someone on their first deal should be getting a private loan. Like I think there's too much risk and that you should be looking out for your lenders more than that. That's just kind of my, you know, personal opinion and thoughts on that of, hey, if you've never remodeled a house, you've never done a deal, I would recommend you use a hard money lender, not, you know, private money, even if someone's willing to lend on your project. Any thoughts on that, Jason?
Absolutely. So like Aaron said, private money, these are usually individuals that are willing to loan you money and the terms are super negotiable. They're not like those hard money companies where these are the set terms. You kind of have to take it or leave it. So for me personally, I know that the first deal I've ever done, I think the first two or three deals I've ever done, I'd use hard money lenders and I came to cash to close, I came with my own money. And the reason for that was because when you're talking about real estate investments, you're talking about tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're not in California where it's millions, but it's a lot of money. And that's, you know, people's retirements, that's people's life savings. And I know personally, I would be very scared. And I just honestly didn't trust myself that early on with that much money. Because while I wanted to think I could, you know, I was good at vetting the deals. And on paper, I knew, you know, what the number should look like. It's very different from how it actually plays out, right? So I am on board. And I also agree with, if you're newer, I would be very hesitant to take on private money, just because you don't want to, especially with like family and friends, because that's just a quick way to burn some bridges or just ruin some relationships too. I've heard multiple stories where, you know, someone borrowed their brother's money, someone borrowed their friend's money, lost it, and they no longer have a great relationship with them. And Christmas dinners are really awkward. So that's my take as well. I kind of align with you there. But I also know people that take on private money loans on their first one, and it goes well too. So a lot of that, I would say, just depends on your level of risk tolerance. But if you have the money available to go take on with a hard money loan, I would go that direction first.
For sure. And so getting into some of the, I guess, terms and what that looks like you kind of said previously, it can be kind of all over the board. And so I guess on hard money, let's talk about that first. So on hard money, I'd say like pretty standard is somewhere between 11 and 12 or 13% interest. I don't know, 2 to 4 points. Would you say that's fair? Yeah. And that kind of varies. Hard money, I feel like that's kind of the general range. When rates were super low, some of the big national companies were doing like hard money at like 7%, which is like insane and unheard of. But a lot of that functions at, you know, prime plus 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, right? So it kind of depends on what rates are at, what people can borrow money at, because, you know, they're either, you know, sourcing this from a fund or they're wrapping lines of credit or whatever, right? So as far as private money, generally it's a little cheaper and I would say just kind of easier. Our people were paying, you know, 8 to 10% interest depending on the project, maybe a point or two. And I'd say that's pretty standard. But some of that too also depends on, you know, rates. Like if someone can put their money in a savings account and get 7% interest, are they really going to want to tie it to something where there's risk involved for 8%? Probably not. So those are things that you kind of have to like take into account. And Jason probably does more of this for us than I do, but a lot of, I would say our, in our kind of company, a lot of times I'm, reaching out to people or making intros to people and saying, hey, like connect them with Jason. Jason kind of handles that. So a lot of times they kind of funnel through me because they saw me on something or whatever, or have reached out to me or Jason, whatever. And then they kind of, we run them to Jason. He kind of gives them an overview of how things work with us and tries to understand not only like what we want, but like what their goals are. Cause like different people want different things. You know, some people want to have their money just tied up forever. Some people want to cycle it super quick. Some people want, hey, I'll do, you know, higher interest and no points. Some people want lower interest and more points. So it's all like trying to figure out too what people are looking for and then how we can, you know, fit them to projects and stuff that, you know, really makes sense. Any thoughts on that, Jason?
I think we'll get into this in a little bit, but private money, like Aaron said, usually a little bit cheaper, but the biggest benefit on using private money is the flexibility piece of it. Because with hard money lenders, like I said, these are companies, they have their rules, their terms, you have to follow a certain draw process with them, they have all their fees, docs, whatever. Private money, we'll get into a little bit later on how we set things up with our private money lenders. There's definitely a right way to do it to protect their money and tie it to the property. But I've seen people where it like private money is super easy. We can send a deal. We have private money lenders now that we've done so many deals with them and they trust us that we can send them a deal. And honestly, they probably don't even look at it and they just approve it and say they're good to lend on it.
Yeah. I mean, we have people now, it's pretty much like a text message away, but that comes with time, right?
So it's definitely the flexibility of it too. A lot of times they might give you all the money up front instead of you having to shell out some money for the rehab and then get reimbursed for the draw process. So really it is the flexibility piece to it too. And also the types of projects you do. Hard money lenders, they have criteria on the stuff they can lend. For example, I'll just take mobile homes as an example. So there are a good amount of hard money lenders that just say, hey, we don't touch mobile homes. We don't lend on mobile homes. I don't care how great the numbers are. If you're buying at 20% of the ARV, we're not lending on it. And so private lenders, though, like if they don't care, that's up to them. Like they can lend on really whatever they want to lend on.
Or like land or lots or, you know, because we'll buy lots and we'll buy it at 30% of what it's worth, but a hard money lender won't touch it because it's not a house. So yeah, the flexibility piece is definitely important.
Absolutely. But I think there are benefits to the hard money as well. The biggest thing for most people is that once you go out and find private money, it's hard to find, I guess, unlimited private money, right? I know some people say they can go do it from experience.
And if you guys have that, let us know because we're interested.
Make the introduction. We're happy to pay referral fees.
Exactly.
But the biggest reason why we still use hard money is because it's a scalability thing. We might do 3, 4, 5, 6 projects and be tapped out of the private money. And if we want to keep taking on more flips, more wholetails, that sort of thing, we have to use hard money. And their pockets are a lot deeper. So therefore, we're able to do more deals. So it's kind of like, hey, do you want to only do 1, 2 deals at a time and only use private money? Or do you maybe want to do, 6, 7 deals at the same time and use hard money? So that is one benefit of using hard money. But I think you want to move on to maybe some do's and don'ts when it comes to...
Let's get into where you find private lenders.
That's a good one. So...
Jason, give me all your private lenders. I want their phones, emails, all that stuff.
So,
which is funny because like people think that like that's a thing you share, which like you kind of learn that like there's a reason it's private. Like we'll share, contractors, we'll share realtors, we'll share contacts, but we're probably not going to give you our source for who lends to us.
Oh, absolutely. And not only that, but also we know ourselves. We know that we have experience. If we ever did, we'd be very hesitant as to who we would share that with. Because again, these are people that's entrusting us with their money. We don't want to refer them to somebody new that's never done a deal before, and then they go and lose this person's money, and it ruins that relationship with us. But finding private lenders, people make it seem like it's so easy. You just go talk to friends, family, whatever. You'll quickly find that it's not that easy because there's not ton of people that have hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars just lying around. They might have an extra, you know, 10K, 20K, but that's not enough to fund a project. So first, I would say you can start with friends and family. Like I would say whoever's in like your first circle of connections. And the biggest thing there is just like talking about real estate, like talking about what you do. Real estate is a passion for me. It's a passion for Aaron. Like we talk about it all the time. And people know what we do. They follow us on Instagram. So it's fairly easy for us to strike up that conversation with our friends or family. And if it does come up like, hey, how do you guys fund the deal? That's kind of how we make the intro there. That's, I think, the first way. Second is just through social media. Again, posting about what we do, posting about the wins, even the losses too. It shows some authenticity that a lot of people, like Aaron said, like reach out to Aaron because he posts about private lending. They reach out to him because they're looking to have their money not tied up in, you know, an account getting 1% interest, but instead having their money work for them. So that's the second thing. And it goes back to just talking about what you do. So that's probably the biggest thing I would say. I don't know if you have anything else, Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, I think for everyone, it's going to be a little different. But, you know, it comes down to, you know, kind of leveraging your network. But it's also just telling people what you do. Like, you never know who you might know that, one, watches your stuff and you don't know that. But two, you know, might have, you know, money in an account that's just sitting there, not making any interest, or, you know, it's in some sort of retirement account they can lend out of, or I don't know, maybe they inherited money and don't know what to do with it. I mean, there's several options. Or like we've even had people that like they've bought rentals, they've fixed and flipped before, and then they realize like, oh, it's actually like kind of better and easier if I just lend my money to people. You know, it's less headache, it's good returns. I don't have to worry about if the project goes right, if I'm going to make money. But yeah, so I mean, all that to be said, like, you know, I think a lot of the lenders that I have found have just come from talking about what I do. And there's people that found me online, people I barely knew or don't know on Instagram or Bigger Pockets, or, hey, I heard you on this podcast, or, you know, a million different things. But it's one of those things, like anything with like content, like you see the results of things you know, years down the line, you see the results of things you were doing like years ago, right? So, you know, I've been doing this full time for like 5 years. And for probably 3 to 4 of that, I've consistently like told people what I'm doing, ups and downs, good, bad, ugly. And then there's people that have like, hey, I've been watching you for 3 years and now I want to lend to you, you know? So I would say if you're looking for private money, one of the biggest things you can do that you might not see the fruit of for years is just start telling people what you do. And it doesn't have to be super like polished. It doesn't have to be like amazing. It's just like get it out there, right? So I would say that's one thing. And, you know, we've just had people over the years reach out to us, you know, that like how we operate, like what we do, have some money they want to put to use. And I mean, it can be anyone. It can be friends. It can be family. It can be people you go to the gym with. It can be old coworker. I mean, it's kind of endless. Just from a more tactical standpoint, the stuff we found that, you know, kind of sparks that interest more is if we share details of a deal and break down, hey, we bought it for this, we put this in it, we made this, our lender lended this amount, you know, they got paid this on their loan, like regardless of how we did on it, right? So even out on ones where we break even, lose money, make a lot less than we thought, you know, our lenders' returns don't change. So that kind of, you know, just specifically that content of showing, hey, this is what our lender made on this has been really helpful for us. I don't know if Jason, you have some stuff you want to add around that, yeah, but I think a lot of it's just putting yourself out there and just being open about what you're doing.
Yeah. So I wanted to tell one really quick, cool story of a private lender. And then, yeah, so I'll get into that first. So going into talking about what we do and also just the fruit of your labor, you kind of see a little bit later on. So we've been running TV commercials and Aaron's been running TV commercials for how long? 3-4 years now?
3 years, probably.
3 years for Murphy Home Buyers, which is our company. And so one of a great story is we were talking with a private lender who asked us out to lunch just to get to know him better. And we were telling him about our experience, about what we do. And we were in some Thai restaurant. And literally as we were talking, our TV commercial popped up on the TV. And then our lender looked at it and he's like, oh, I didn't know you guys are on TV. And it provided just like some sort of legitimacy. And he was right after that, he was like down to, you know, lend on whatever. So it you know, it's like, it goes back to talking about what you do and just like putting in the work early, because we didn't make that commercial and Aaron didn't shoot that commercial with intention of, hey, let me go and try to find private money lenders. It was, hey, I'm wanting to build this company. I'm wanting to do off-market deals. This is a marketing strategy. And this is just another added benefit to that. But that was just a quick side story. And then the other way I was going to say for people to get private lenders is through referrals. So if you have one private lender, two good private lenders, typically people who have money know other people that also have money. So one of our best private lenders who reached out to us, I think he just social media is how he found us. His, you know, after he did a couple deals with us, he's like, hey, I really like what you guys do. I know my dad has a bunch of money in his IRA, self-directed IRA. He's looking to put to use. I would like to go ahead and make the introduction. And now his dad also lends to us and he's one of our favorite lenders as well.
And he'll hit us up like pretty regularly and be like, hey, I'm going to free up some other money to like lend to you guys more, which we've never asked for, but it's like pretty cool. So, but yeah, it's a thing of like generally the people that have the ability to lend are around similar people that also are kind of in that same situation. So definitely a good tip there.
Absolutely. So do you think, I think it's time to get into some do's and don'ts with private lending, because I know, like Aaron mentioned earlier, it can be the Wild West out there. Like you can kind of set it out however you want, but we do it in a certain way to protect the private lender's money. So Aaron, do you want to get into some maybe don'ts with private lending or some mistakes that you commonly see?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest is, yeah, I mean, so our biggest thing is we always want to make sure that the loan is, you know, collateralized against the property. So we're always tying the loan to the property. We're not like commingling funds and saying, hey, let's have a bunch of different lenders kind of tied together on this one thing. But the biggest thing for us is, you know, making sure that, you know, that money is actually tied to the property. So if something happens, they're protected by the value of the property that, you know, ideally is going to go up and make their loan safer as it goes on, right? So that's kind of the idea of, hey, we're going to force more value into this. So what was leveraged at this will actually go, you know, the leverage will go down, making your loan even more secure as the property value increases. But with that, I mean, I think the biggest thing is like, we always run everything through a title company and we always have attorneys draft docs that, you know, is in Texas, it is a deed of trust, which is like a mortgage and a promissory note. And then on almost everything, we still personally guarantee it just as an extra level of, you know, security for that lender of, hey, like if this goes wrong, we're like giving you permission to go after us personally, not just our company. Like we're not just going to close the company and run away. So, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, always run it through the title company. I mean, I'm sure we have lenders at this point that would just wire us money, like, and it's fine. And, you know, I like to think we would never take advantage of that. But, you know, it's a thing that, you know, kind of from day one, we've just said, hey, this is how we're going to set it up. Like, doesn't matter if we've done one deal with you or a million. It's always going to go through a title company. It's always going to, you know, have the right paperwork with it. We're never going to just like do it kind of off the record, which I think that's kind of where you see people start running into issues. And, you know, everything's fine and the market's great. But like there was, I forget where the investor was, somewhere in the Carolinas last year that got like, you know, convicted on fraud. And he had tied like 49 loans to one property or something. And it was like, he had tied up like $1 million to like a $40,000 property, like each of them thinking they were the only loan on it, but he just kept doing the same thing over and over. So, you know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, it's not super regulated, but it's about like, hey, always go straight to the title company. Always make sure you have, you know, the right paperwork with that. What I miss?
So I'll get into a little bit on, actually, before that, some big don'ts, like don't over borrow. That's a big one. So if you think, again, going back to my example, you're buying something for $100,000 and need $60,000 rehab, it's worth $200,000 or maybe a little bit more. Don't go and borrow like $180,000, right? You only needed $160,000. Don't go and over borrow because It's just going to create a bunch of issues, and you're kind of just screwing that investor, because if they do ever have to foreclose or whatever on you, they're going to end up with a property where, you know, they maybe paid too much for it and now they're in the red. And that's the first one. And then I would say another big no is, completely blanked on that actually. So maybe we'll get back to that, but I'll skip ahead.
So,
go ahead.
No, I'll jump into one more example too. So like one we did recently, I mean, one of the nice things about private lenders is you don't really, most of the time, unless, you know, they're super particular, you don't have draws. So you're getting all the rehab money up front. So we have a lender recently that we bought a lot. We're moving a mobile home onto it. So we made the whole loan amount for pretty much lot plus installation plus mobile home purchase price. But at the closing, we just bought the lot, right? So would this person have given us the extra $100,000 to go buy the mobile home and installation costs and not care? Probably. But with that, so we intentionally were like, hey, you're not asking for this, but this is how we're going to do it. We're going to hold back that $80,000, $100,000, whatever it ends up being, until we go purchase that mobile home. Once we purchase it, then we'll, you know, we'll set up a draw, which we normally wouldn't do, but on something where, you know, it's a hundred and, I don't know, call it $120,000 loan for what is currently a $20,000 property. We just felt like that was the best way to set that up, where we just want to make sure that they're protected, right? And, you know, keep a level of, I don't know, professionalism and, like, I don't even know the word, but with that of, you know, we just want to make sure we're operating just as above board as possible. So that's one of the things we did on one of those recently. Like, would they have just wired us the money? Yeah, probably. But we felt like it was worth taking the extra step and making sure they're even more protected by holding that back until we buy it and move it on the lot.
And that's especially important when you have multiple projects going on, because if you have just an extra $100,000 sitting in that account, and hey, I have this other project over here that went 20K over budget, it's really easy, you know, start robbing Peter to pay Paul. And that's where I think you can get into a lot of trouble. So, and thanks for, yeah, that's a great point. And also gave me a little bit of time to think about the other don't. And the other don't was what you were saying with that example in the Carolinas is, don't be taking multiple private lenders and putting them on one property, unless you're very upfront about it, right? Unless you're saying, hey, I have this property, maybe it's a higher price point, $800,000. I know maybe one private money lender might not have that much. I'm looking for maybe two private lenders, but you're being very upfront, transparent about the whole thing you're doing. You're letting someone know that you're the first position loan, you're the second position loan, and just being transparent about the whole thing. So don't tie multiple people's money up if you're going to be shady and just not transparent about doing that. So I will get into now how we set everything up, and there's definitely more than one right way to do it. This is not the Bible by any means, but this is how we do it to protect our lenders. So Aaron mentioned some of these documents already. We run everything through the title company. We use an attorney that helps draft these documents. The first document is the promissory note, and I'll explain the documents too, just in case people are not aware of why we do it or how these documents function. So the first one is a promissory note, and that basically lists us, it lists the lender, and it basically just says, hey, you know, Murphy Home Buyers and Jason and Aaron, they are borrowing $150,000. They're borrowing at this percent interest rate. They're paying this many points. This is how long the term is for. And it basically outlines all the details or the terms of the loan. So it's documented somewhere. And then that's the first one. The second one is a deed of trust. So in Texas, as Aaron mentioned, we use a deed of trust, which is pretty much the same thing as a mortgage, not exactly the same, but it functions fairly the same. And this document says that they are, that private lender is now almost like the bank, right? So they hold the mortgage. And if you were to default on the loan for any reason and they needed to foreclose on you, this document would help them do that.
So it's actually a lien against the property.
And so we actually have a third document, and that's like a separate lien. So we also have a third document that's a warranty deed with a vendor's lien. So warranty deed, that just transfers from the seller to us as the owner. But with the vendor's lien, it basically says that we owe whatever amount the loan is for, they place a lien on the property. So if we were to ever try to sell it without the lender's knowledge and we were using a title company, like, it would pop up in a second and they know that there is a loan attached to that property. So those are the three documents we use. We will have that drafted up by an attorney. We always send those documents over to the private lender in order for them just to verify all the information is correct. If they have any questions, we answer them because we want them to understand like how the process works, how their loan is protected and collateralized with the asset. And then the last thing, or I guess two more things, is we always have them send the money directly to the title company to hold an escrow. So that way they're not sending the money directly to us and we can run away with it. And the last thing, this is more the title company does this, is like a CYA thing for them. But before they fund anything, once all the documents are signed, all the closing documents, they send all those closing documents to the lender and they say, hey, everything's signed. We're good to go. Title's clear. Can we have your permission to disperse the funds? And then that's kind of like the last CYA thing for the lender. And then the lender will say, yes, if everything's good, money will be dispersed and the deal is officially closed at that point. Did I miss anything there as far as steps go?
The one thing you forgot that I would make sure you do on every single deal if you're lending is you want to make sure the person borrowing gets an insurance policy and lists you as the person that holds the mortgage. I don't know. I'm all confused. But essentially, you want to make sure they have interest or insurance on the property and have you listed as the person holding the mortgage. So if, you know, property burns down, whatever, you're still protected. You know, that's something that a hard money lender is going to not fund a loan without, but private lenders may not know that. So, you know, that's another thing you want to make sure you always do is make sure of insurance, make sure they're listed as the, you know, additionally insured, mortgagee, mortgager. I should just stop saying those words because I don't know what I'm saying. But yeah, so I would make sure that you always have insurance and they're listed on that.
Yeah, that was a great point. So we do that as well. And so that kind of gets into, hey, if you're now I'm taking the perspective of like a private lender. So if I'm a private lender, you know, what do I need to do to make sure that my money is safe? And so I actually recently made a video on my Instagram about this, but these are the verification steps that I would say, like if you're a private lender looking to lend funds to someone, this is the stuff that I would verify. So first, verify the person. Like how well do you know them? Is it a friend, a family member, someone that you trust? Or is it some random dude that you found on Instagram and Facebook? Or is it some random person that just reached out to you, like cold email, right? Like who's this person? What is their track record? What is what's the word I'm looking for? I guess the reputation of this person, right? Like if you're hearing a lot of bad stuff about them for multiple people, probably someone you should stay away from. So verify the person first. Second, verify the deal.
And they should be happy to like connect you with someone who's done a deal with them before. Like any of our, if we had a new lender and they said, hey, like, cool, do you have someone I can talk to who's done this before? Like, we wouldn't hesitate to say, cool, yeah, talk to this person. Like, here's their number, email, have everyone talk to them.
Yep, references are huge. So next, I would verify the deal. And this is as easy as whatever the title company for the deal is, just reaching out to them. Hey, is this the actual buyer, actual seller? Is there a title commitment? Can I see the title commitment? Because we've seen a lot of people get scammed, or at least we've heard a lot of people get scammed where they thought they're lending on some deal, 123 Main Street. They send the money. Turns out that was never a property that was under contract. And then they just got swindled out of money. So making sure that there's actually a deal and title is open and there's a title commitment and all that sort of thing. And then third, verify the documents. So we just went over all the private lender documents that we use. It's going to vary by state and it'll vary just based on the relationship with the person, but just making sure that you have something documented. Like don't just do a handshake deal. You're going to need something at a minimum, a promissory note. I would like a little bit more as a private lender, but something documented where if things were to go awry, you can like hold something up that they sign, take it to court, whatever, and it would have some validity to it. And then
it's just a lot easier to make sure all that's taken care of when like things are still good. Mm-hmm. Like don't wait for things to go wrong to try to get documentation in place. That's probably a good piece of advice for pretty much anything, but especially with lending.
Mm-hmm. And then as Aaron said, verify the insurance. You can just request a copy. And then last, always send your money to the title company to hold an escrow. Never send it to the borrower directly unless you've developed a big relationship with them, done a ton of deals, you really trust them. But even then, we like to just send our money straight to the title company because that way, you know, it's safe, it's being held properly, and it's the person's not going to run away with it. So that's what I would do if you're looking to private lend and you're not quite sure what to do to keep your money safe. Did I miss anything there, Aaron?
I don't think so. I think that's about it. But I guess I'll kind of close with just a little tip about, you know, approaching lenders, kind of what that looks like. So, or a few things. So one thing which we didn't talk about is the way we set these up is we always make them, we don't really do monthly payments. It all balloons on the back end. And it's a thing that, you know, we found, we just pitch it that way, right? Like, it's not like a, you can do this or that. It's like, hey, this is how it works. We're going to, on this deal, we pay, you know, X percent interest and points, and it all balloons on the end. And honestly, it's easier for everyone than trying to like keep up with monthly payments. Like, most people don't want that. We don't, honestly, we don't really want to deal with that. But it's a thing of like, we just stop giving people the option, and turns out no one cares. Like, people like just getting paid on the end. They're fine with that. So that's one thing. And then with that too, I mean, I always tell people, I'm like, lending with us is an opportunity. Like, and make sure you're pitching it that way. Like, if people, you know, you're giving them the opportunity to invest in something that's, you know, a good asset and secured, and they're going to make really good returns that they can't really make anywhere else. So I would always say, you know, when you're talking to your private lenders, because we've had some like, hey, I'm interested, and they push back, and I'm like, cool, well, we don't need you. Like, this is an opportunity. So make sure you're pitching it that way of, hey, we're really good operators. You know, it's only certain people get to work with us, right? So making sure you're really selling that as like, not like a, hey, I really need your money and I'm desperate, but like, hey, this is a really great opportunity. And if not, you know, we'll find someone else who wants it. You know, it's not a big deal. But yeah, so with that, you know, I'll close. And, you know, if you guys have questions on this stuff, hit us up. Let us know if this kind of conversation is helpful. We're trying to, you know, one, give people, you know, a picture of what's going on in San Antonio, but honestly, just provide as much value as we can, you know, for people getting started, or, you know, maybe somewhere along their journey of investing in real estate. So let us know if this stuff's helpful, or if there's, you know, topics you think would be helpful. And we're always open to ideas on that. If there's people you want to see us have on the show, we're going to start interviewing guests. So any of those suggestions would be super helpful. And always like, subscribe, share with someone who you think would find this beneficial. And if you want to connect with me and Jason, the best place is probably Instagram. I am Aaron.Beal. Jason is Investor Jason Lee. And that's all we have. And we'll see you all next week.
Bye, guys.